Welcome to Showdown. I'm Mark Kaysen, and it is Tuesday, and that's the 7th of May, and we are ready to go with a very interesting and great guest, and this is Jamie Cox-Antwi, and you are running for candidate. You're a candidate for state rep in the 78th district, and exactly where is that, Jamie?
Yeah, so the 78th district of Missouri is actually downtown St. Louis.
Oh, okay.
So downtown St. Louis core, around the ballpark, and it also goes all the way up to North City, St. Louis Place, Carr Square, and then South City neighborhoods as well, all the way down to Graboid Park.
Gotcha. Now, the way I found you was through the great school that you went to, and the great school that I'm teaching at, and that's Cardinal Ritter College Prep High School. And what year did you graduate?
I am proudly class of 2014. So I am on my 10-year anniversary of graduating from Cardinal Ritter, which is wild for me to say out loud. Yes.
I believe it. Yeah. But listen, I've come into contact with so many people over so many years that graduated like you and stick close to the school.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, my family, I come from three generations of St. Louis, Missourians. So, you know, the boomerang effect that we have in the city, it hit me as well. So that's why I decided to stay here and settle here. But yeah, Ritter is a school that's been close to my heart ever since I've graduated. And you know, this teaching there, it's a family and it stays a family no matter how long you've been out of it. And I've definitely felt that as an alum.
And that is really an important thing that you're saying, because, you know, people hear family and they don't realize that's no joke when it comes to Cardinal Ritter. It is family. And even today, if you walk up and down the hallways and say to the kids, tell me what the important thing is about this school, the first thing out of their mouth is going to be, it's family. A family.
Yep. That stays. And that stayed for years. I mean, I know I was, you know, lucky enough to be on the campus right off of spring where you're teaching at. But we would have alum come back and forth all the time, you know, class of 90, 80 that went to school on Thecla. And they're telling us stories about the Thecla days.
Yeah. So you'll always hear about the Thecla days. That's for sure.
That stays through generations.
Yeah, definitely. So, and I'm going to assume that you at least have some degree of connection with Alicia Saunier.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we were actually, when she was at Ritter, we were actually in the same class.
Okay. Yep. Well, I figured. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. So, and do you, are you in touch with her now?
Yeah. So I actually used to live in her ward before my husband and I moved over to a different ward. So,
we
definitely stayed connected. We actually had a little show called Black Tea, speaking of podcasts, that we did right when we graduated from college. So I'm proud of all the work that she's done as alderwoman. I think she's done an amazing job with the 7th Ward. And to your point, Ritter produces community-oriented people, passionate people, and she's definitely one of those.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Do you know the name Cheryl Dozier?
That sounds really familiar to me, but it doesn't ring a bell off the top of my head.
Okay. Aside from everything we talk about today, you need to get in touch with Cheryl, and I will send you her contact information. She's the executive director of the Missouri Black Caucus.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we were talking about you today. So.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. I'll definitely reach out.
Absolutely. So first, talk to me about politics in 2024, aside from the fact that, you know, St. Louis and Missouri and all that, just how do you feel about getting into something that is pretty crazy right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, definitely 2024 is a I've been to politics and be running for office. And that's an understatement to say the least. I think for me, one of the reasons I was even motivated to do this is I've been a person that's paid attention to politics ever since I was a little girl. I actually grew up in U City. And at the time U City was going through a lot of turmoil, a lot of violence. And I actually wrote a letter to my mayor even back then, and telling her all the ideas I had of what she could be doing better. And that's how I ended up starting the University City Youth Society, even back when I was 14.
Now, which mayor was that, by the way?
Shelley Welsh.
Okay. Actually. So that must have been right before Joe Adams?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And before he was a state representative and all of that. Gotcha. Yep, so this is way back then. And I tell you that story because I think, you know, it speaks to the importance of even being engaged in politics. And I think one of the biggest problems that we have this year in 2024 is that a lot of people are just jaded and tuned out, especially young people like myself. And so that's one of the reasons I decided to run, because I think Missouri is really lacking that engagement, especially from young Democrats like myself. I'm running as a proud Democrat in politics. And they feel that way because a lot of the things that we're seeing, not only on the national level, but on the legislative level, of our legislators not paying attention to actually doing their job of governing and being more focused on political theater and political apathy. And so I think we need more people that are willing to speak up, that are willing to challenge our elected officials and say, hey, you know, the constituents actually care about the importance of policy, the importance of making sure things are being funded. That is the type of work that I studied. I actually got my degree in public policy at Vanderbilt University. I earned a scholarship right after I graduated to Ritter. And I give credit to a lot of my teachers for helping me do that. But that's how I, you know, got engaged. And I was motivated by the experience that I had as a teenager to study public policy, because I think that type of legislation is really important. And I think those are the two things that we're really missing this year.
Yeah. And it's so funny because I know that our graduates, and I've been there 6 years, and I know that our graduates go, first of all, to excellent schools. I mean, you know, when you say you went to Vanderbilt, I mean, no surprise. I mean, that's, you know, Ritter students go to top schools, and they also go mostly all expenses paid as well, because, you know, they get scholarships. In fact, huge numbers of scholarships. And I don't have to tell you, but the kids get scholarships to many schools and then they have to pick one.
Yep. I was actually accepted to all 18 of my colleges and universities when I graduated from Ritter, which is crazy to say. And I know I was just at the gala this February, and I heard two of the students speak, and that legacy is continuing even now. So that's why I definitely, and I know it's Teacher Appreciation Week as well. So shout out to you for being a teacher, and shout out to all the teachers that I had at Ritter, to Shante Lyons, if you're listening, wherever you are. Miss Bain was teaching back then, Mr. Pico, all of these teachers, they pour into the students. And that's, you know, that's why I was able to do what I did. And so, yeah, being a Vanderbilt graduate, something I'm very proud of, their public policy program emphasizes some of the things that I'm talking to you about. But to me, that knowledge was important. And that's also something that Ritter taught me. You know, you have to be able to understand the aspects of what you're speaking about and be confident. And we unfortunately have a lot of politicians in our elected office, especially down at Jeff City, that don't really understand some of the legislation they're advocating for, especially on our opposing side. And I think that's a problem.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in a second. I do want to say to you, though, that Shante, last I heard, was in Texas. And I think that's where he is right now. And he is the one that brought me into Cardinal Ritter, because we took a class in, guess what, critical race theory. So we took some really great classes together, and he's a terrific person, terrific scholar, and he just had this opportunity that came up in Texas. But of course, our new principal, Dr. Edwards?
Dr. Edwards, yes, I've met Dr. Edwards a couple of times.
Yeah, so he's fabulous too. Do you know Veronica O'Brien?
Related to Mr. O'Brien?
Well, no, not at Cardinal Ritter. Okay. Veronica is well, okay, same way. Craig is Veronica's nephew.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so they're connected that way. But the reason that you might know Veronica, I thought possibly, is because she's very active politically as well, and she was the president of the St. Louis Board of Education for some time and created quite a stir not surprisingly, you know, that's just, you know, the family way, the Cardinal Ritter way. Everybody yeah. is involved and engaged in trying to make a difference in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and definitely that's something that the Ritter community, I think for me, really poured in. I know the benefit of me being able to go to a school like Vanderbilt is that I did get exposure out, but the challenge was I was gone for 5 years. So after I graduated, I was living in a different city. And so I felt like I missed a lot of, you know, you're talking about all these amazing people, building those connections with them while I was away.
Sure.
But I think the benefit of that is that I did get exposure to a different area and a different community. And when I decided to move back, I've been able to bring that back. So it's really, really great to hear. That's something that, you know, was poured into me as a kid, that the Ritter community is still extremely engaged in all of that. That's something that I saw, and that's something that inspired me even when I was a kid.
Yeah. And it's funny because, again, Joe Pico yeah. is the one who told me about you and said, oh, Kaysen, you got to talk to Jamie. She is great. You know, so,
yep. Yeah. Yep. And I stay connected with a lot of my teachers, even through social media and things like that over the years. So I'm honored to hear him say that. He's always been a huge supporter and just a fan of all of his students, even after all these years. So,
yeah. And the reason why I emphasize all of this, mm-hmm. not just to, you know, inside baseball in the school, but yeah. because I think it's very important for people to know what a great school this is, that yeah. it's sitting here in the middle of St. Louis, right down at the Del Mar Divide, and mm-hmm. and it's something, well, it's just a gem that people may not always know about, may not understand, and it's something important in terms of, like, I always say this, you know, Vashon is right down the street, a mile away, and you know the problems that they have at Vashon, but mm-hmm. let me tell you something, and you probably know this, it's not the kids.
Nope.
It's the grown-ups. Mm-hmm. It's the grown-ups. It's the political system. It's the way we fund our schools. It's everything that we know has to do with systemic racism,
yep.
not the kids. Because the kids are just kids. They're teenagers. Yep. They're great at Vashon. They're great at Cardinal Ritter. And the difference between Cardinal Ritter and Vashon could be very easily changed if we had people in power who wanted to make the difference.
Yep. I completely agree with that. And I think that's one thing that I, because like I said, my family's been here for a while. I've got family that graduated from Vashon, Roosevelt, myself graduating from Ritter, U City High. And so when you speak about that, I think it's really important for people in St. Louis to realize we have a lot of talent, especially with our kids in this city. What they need is resources, they need support, and they need encouragement. And when I think about the difference and what I'm seeing, and again, I'm only 10 years out of high school, between our kids these days, is that there is a disparity of resources that is being poured into our students. And that is the difference in impact for our students being able to go to college or go to vocational school and pick up trades, because they need somebody to be able to tell them whatever it is that they're wanting to accomplish, that they can do it. And I think the most valuable thing I got out Ritter is not, you know, college prep. It's not the academic resources that I had. It's not being able to get college credits. It's the fact that I have people every day when I was in high school telling me, Jamie, whatever you want to achieve, you can achieve it because you have power and you have confidence. And that is what inspired me more than anything else I got out of my high school experience. So I'm so proud that you're emphasizing that. I will continue to be a testament to it. I think my life is a testament to it. And yeah, that's why, you know, the minute Mr. Pico introduced us, I said, absolutely, any Ritter teacher, I owe, even though I didn't have the pleasure of having you, I owe my life to because of the school that you're pouring into.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, just yesterday, we had on the air a very, very good friend of mine who is running for sheriff. Do you know Alfred Montgomery?
We have met, yep.
Okay. So Alfred was my student at Vashon, and you know, he was involved, in fact, not involved, he led a very famous walkout at Vashon that spread through the entire city, focusing on the importance of education. And, you know, he was standing out on the sidewalk in front of the school with Jamila Nasheed at his side, supporting him in those days. And, you know, we always love to tell the story that the superintendent came up to him and said, Alfred, if you don't get back in the classroom, you're going to jail. And Alfred put his hands out and said, you know what? This was good enough for Dr. Martin Luther King. Cuff me. And I can tell you, the superintendent ran. Yeah. So, I mean, the power that, yeah. that young people have is mm-hmm. is incredible. And you know, here, Alfred from Vashon is running for sheriff and has, you know, many of the endorsements now around the city. And he's probably going to be the next sheriff in the city of St. Louis. So, you know, all of you are building this amazing cadre of young people coming out of the Black community, very well educated and prepared to lead this city in an amazing direction. I'm very excited about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I do think that speaks to exactly what you said earlier about, you know, the importance of this moment we have this year. A lot of people, you know, can talk about the negatives, but there also is a lot of positive because there's a lot of potential here in the city of St. Louis. And I think it starts with exactly what you said, which is that people are having the courage to speak up and they have the talent here in the city. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, coming from Cardinal Ritter, obviously the issue of abortion, it's a Catholic mm-hmm. school, is a very complicated one, but it's not complicated for me at all because I'm not even worried about that issue. What I'm interested in, and I'm sure that this is going to resonate with you greatly, and that is number one, women's health care. And so first, all women's health care. It's a disaster suddenly across the United States because the right wing has lost its mind.
Yep.
Talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, especially when it comes to issues of women's health care and issues being elevated across the levels, right? We have the national conversation and then we have the state-based conversations. I think the most fundamental thing that a lot of people are missing is that women's health care is comprehensive. People narrow, as you said, on the issue of abortion when they're talking about health care, but they don't talk about contraception. They don't talk about quality testing, STI testing. They don't talk about prenatal and postnatal care. All of these things are comprehensive to women's health care. And the challenge that we have right now in this country in general is that healthcare is too expensive. And a lot of our resources, when you talk about medical insurance company and things like that, don't actually fund all of women's healthcare, even though women make up 50% of our population. And so I think for me first, when I talk to people about the issues that we have going on and the dialogue of what we're emphasizing right now, which is abortion, is that this is a comprehensive issue that's affecting half of our population. And we have to talk about it comprehensively. So I think that's my first stance on it, which is that we need to elevate all of what encompasses women's health care. And I speak on that as somebody that is a young woman that's hoping to raise a family here in the state first and foremost. And then we get to the issues, and I'll speak more at the state level because that's the office that I'm running for. I think one of the issues that you correctly highlighted is that the right wing of our state has lost its mind in the way that it's talking about women's healthcare issues. Just this session, they decided to defund Medicaid to Planned Parenthood, even though Planned Parenthood is no longer state legally allowed to fund abortions, which is the whole reason that they decided to pass that legislation. What that actually ended up doing is defunding people that needed that financial assistance from being able to receive contraception care and STI care, among other types of comprehensive women's health care. And I think that is one of the reasons that we have to talk about women's health care in that way, because people miss the point. And that is what our legislature is actually currently doing with this piece of legislation that they're passing. And so we need people in the legislature. We need women in the legislature, because right now we still have, in the year 2024, a misrepresented legislature when it comes to gender. That can explain to people what this legislation is really doing.
Yeah. And we have also an additional very serious problem across the United States. Again, I'm sure you know it, but it needs to be discussed all the time. And that is that Black women, when they have children, are three times more likely to die than white women, even when they're wealthy.
Yes, absolutely.
This is bad. This is something that we're not really dealing with. You know, we both, you know, talk about the right wing here in Missouri. These people I don't care what their situation is, what side they're on. They should be screaming from the rooftops as well that this is unacceptable.
It is unacceptable. And I think the root cause, as we both can recognize and call out, is the fact that we unfortunately are still dealing with racial discrimination and issues in the healthcare system in this country. And that is one of the reasons why Black women have the highest maternal mortality rate, because unfortunately we still have within our medical system a belief that, you know, Black women may be able to have all sorts of different needs in healthcare, different pain tolerances, these biases that have continued to be perpetuated in our country. I think we have to acknowledge that when we talk about our healthcare system and the maternal mortality rate. And then we also have to talk about just access to resource issues. I mean, again, Black women tend to be disproportionately uninsured, disproportionately receiving the prenatal healthcare that they need in advance of even getting to the delivery room. And all of these are perpetual systems that we're dealing with. I do want to give a shout out. I believe Representative Jamie Johnson actually passed some legislation recently to make sure that doulas can also be received and acknowledged and receive funding for women. And I think that's really important because, again, having that maternal advocate in a doula in the delivery room is really, really important. So that just speaks to the power, again, when we talk about state-based legislation that can help solve some of these issues. That's one of the biggest reasons. And that's something that we've seen studies across the nation that can help us solve some of these maternal mortality rate problems for Black women. But again, we need an advocate. We need somebody that can speak to and pass that type of legislation in our legislatures.
Yeah. And we certainly need people like you in the legislature, not just to pack up the Democratic Party, which does need to be certainly revived in the state. It's in trouble, but not because of Missouri as much as because of the entire Midwest South connection that has turned very toxic in so many ways. And one of those is the way that we deal with education. And I know when I read recently about how the state of Missouri was raising the pay for teachers, and I thought to myself, if they think that's the only problem, they are lost in space somewhere. Because I don't know if you're familiar with the name Danielle Tormala. Do you know that name?
I do not.
Okay. Well, she's in Wentzville, or she was. She was the superintendent of Wentzville. And, of course, Wentzville has taken on this basically identity of being, you know, the headquarters of everything anti-Black in Missouri. Yeah. You know, ban Toni Morrison, you know, get rid of Black history and Black literature. And, in fact, Danielle, who just left her position as superintendent, she was trying to develop a serious DEI program for that area. And not only did they kick her out, but they threatened to kill her. Many people threatened to kill her. She really had to get out. It was just unlivable. And on top of it, they had to give her $1 million to get rid of her. And I guess the truth is they don't even care about the money. Because if they can stop Blackness, that's all they care about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there is a war on DEI in this country that is rooted in a whole lot of issues we could probably spend another half hour talking about. Sure. So I won't even go into it. But what I will say is the reason that this scares me when we, you know, politicize diversity, equity, and inclusion, we're politicizing all kinds of things that extend past race, which is what, you know, the party on the other side and the people that believe in that seem to be focused on. Diversity is holistic. Diversity is what we're talking about with gender representation. Diversity is race-based. Diversity is economic-based. And all of these things talk about and they diminish the importance of being able to have a fully representative piece of what our country is. We can talk about how Black people got here, and we can talk about the systemic oppression that we have endured for the last decades in this country. But when we remove that conversation from the dialogue, we are actually removing the truth about how our nation is formed and where we are. And that to me is what I say to any kind of, whether conservative, Republican, or just people that don't believe in DEI. That's what I say DEI is. DEI is actually the truth about this country. And we cannot remove the truth from our education system, because what that does is put our future descendants in a position to not be able to move forward. And so I think that's what the war on DEI really is. And when you have people, like you said, that are trying to keep these programs and trying to extend these programs, you know, being persecuted in the way that the person you spoke about was persecuted, I think that's what we're actually losing by removing those people from the conversation. And I, you know, in my day job, work in corporate America, and corporate America is facing the same problem right now with not being able to talk about DEI and the reality that it is. And I just think it's a huge problem, and it puts us backwards in this country instead of going forward.
Well, it's just hard to believe, really, that you know, 60 years ago, we were in the middle of a great civil rights movement. And here we are in 2024, and the push is to depress all of that.
Yep. And the advances that we've seen from the civil rights movement, and a lot of people don't acknowledge this, weren't just about equality for Black people. It was about equality holistically. Women were able to advance because of the civil rights movement. Our economy was able to advance because of the civil rights movement, because we were keeping a huge portion of our people away from being able to fairly participate. And so, you know, if you think about what we would have lost without the civil rights movement, we would have lost having the first Black president, Barack Obama, being able to be here. We would have lost tons and tons of elected officials, women, Black people from across our state being able to have representation. And we would have lost what we're talking about now with the challenges of not having Black doctors represented, Black teachers represented. All of that is a consequence of, you know, being able to have equality in our country. And so I think when you talk about us being set back, we're not actually acknowledging what removing this importance of diversity from the conversation can actually do to our country. And that's why it's dangerous.
Yeah. What do you think the strategy is for rebuilding some kind of a progressive existence in the Missouri legislature? Because we're in trouble, and everybody knows it. So what can we do? Yeah, let's start with that.
Yeah, I think the most important thing we can do is what I was kind of talking about at the top of this conversation was getting people engaged. One thing that I'm trying to do in my campaign is really elevate the next generation of leadership. And you highlighted and named a couple of really, really great young Black leaders that are doing great things in St. Louis. And I think they need to be elevated. I think people need to hear us, because people need hope, and they need to be able to see that this generation is not giving up on the Democratic presence in the state. And the second thing I'll say is that we need to recognize that St. Louis has a lot of power in our state, but we are not a bubble. And I think what a lot of people, especially, and I will say, you know, in even the electoral climate that we have and the races that we're seeing in 2024 are leaving out, is that we have allies across the state. We have allies in Kansas City. We have allies in Springfield. We have allies in Columbia. There are Democrats across the state, but we need to be able to have joint conversations. And so in my campaign, I have social media, TikTok, Facebook, you name it. What you may notice if you go on there is that I'm having conversations with Democrats outside of St. Louis. I am partnering with Democratic candidates in Springfield, partnering with Democratic candidates in Jeff City, because I think we need to work together to combat what's happening in our state. And if we do not do that, Mark, I think we will continue to see the supermajority grow of Republicans, and we will continue to see policy go backwards. And that is the approach that I think will change the game for us. And 2024 is the year to get it done.
Yeah. If you come into contact with a lady named Randy McCallion, Do you know?
I don't know Randy, but I'm writing
that
down.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because she is running in Southeast Missouri for Congress, and yeah, she's got an uphill battle, you know, for sure. And you know, my guess is you probably are on a path to get yourself elected here. I think that's something that is going to happen. Randy's a great candidate. She was on the air. We talked about a lot of different great issues, but she is getting swamped at the moment down there. But she won't give up, because she believes in you know, the change that needs to occur here. And I think there are a lot of people out there like that you've probably come into contact and connected with, and those connections and the support for people like her and for you, that's mm-hmm. what's necessary in order to rebuild some kind of progressive presence in the state.
Absolutely. And what I will say, and one thing on filing day, when I went down to filing day, as all candidates in the state of Missouri do, that I was talking about with my peers that are challenging Republican incumbents, is that a lot of them have that same attitude. They can't give up because people have to see Democratic challengers on tickets across the states. And I'm sure the individual that you're speaking about, Randy, is one of those people. And the impact that they're having in their race actually does affect us here in St. Louis, because I can't get my legislation passed if I don't have allies down there across the state. And so I think that what you're talking about is the perfect thing. And I think people need to realize that. And when I'm talking to constituents, when I'm walking down and canvassing, that's one thing I tell them, because they talk to me all the time about feeling like, well, there's no one challenging the Republicans. Actually, there are, but we need to know their names and we need to be able to get them support from St. Louis and from Kansas City. And I think we can do it.
Yeah. And actually, in the second congressional district, which is where I am here in St. Louis, do you know the name Ray Hartman?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Ray is running. I've been friends with Ray for a million years, and he's running to beat Ann Wagner. And and frankly, I think Ann Wagner is extremely vulnerable. You know, so I think there are so many people that are so deeply entrenched in this right wing corner of craziness that they can be beaten. People are not that crazy.
Nope. And people are jaded, especially what they're seeing at the federal level with our representatives in the House right now. If they can't even govern their own House when they have the majority, how can we trust them to continue to govern with anything? So I think you're absolutely right. I think Republicans are vulnerable in a way that they've never been before. And I think that's why, especially this year, every single race, whether it's the top of the ticket or the bottom, and we'll leave the presidency out of this whole conversation, but I think that is why this year, to your point earlier, is so, 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 so important.
Yeah. And believe me, anybody listening to me is probably in shock that we've made it through a half an hour and I haven't said that bad name. But it's we don't even need to bother you with that, really. It's a waste of time. Waste of time. Yeah. But look, what else are you looking at in terms of issues that you're really going to, you know, press from your campaign? And the other thing is, are you knocking doors?
Yes, absolutely. So I'll answer your first question when it comes to issues. I think we talked about a lot of them. One of my biggest things with my platform, which is to grow, change, and build the 78th district. We talked about the change when it comes to change for families, highlighting education and healthcare. We talked about the bill when it comes to protecting the democracy. But the first element of my platform is grow, and that relates to economic development. And that's actually what I do for a living, Mark. So I've been working in community development finance since I moved back to the city of St. Louis. I work for an institution that does investing in affordable housing, renewable energy, all things that we really, really need in the state. And I think the reason that this is most important to the 78th district in particular is because I'm running to represent downtown St. Louis. And we see there was a Wall Street Journal just published a couple of months ago that talked about all the negative things that people like to say about St. Louis. And I think what people miss is the positives and the opportunity that we have here. The 78th district is actually the youngest district that we have in the entire state of Missouri, and getting younger, because this is where, when people move to St. Louis like me, they want to live. They want to live next to Ballpark Village. They want to live in South City. They want to live in North City and be able to walk to Crown Candy. And so I think we need to take advantage of that and make St. Louis the vibrant city that we know it can be, because it historically was. And so when I talk about economic development, one thing that I like to highlight to folks is that the purse strings of our state is actually in Jefferson City. That's where our budgets are set. That's where money comes from. And so a lot of the nonprofit organizations that we have doing great work have actually not been receiving the resources they could be to help emphasize that economic development from Jefferson City. So that's one of the most important things. If I'm elected, I will be prioritizing. And I will say I know how to do it, because that's what I've been doing for the last 5 years. And so I think what Jeff City needs right now is somebody that can communicate that message across the aisle and across the state and get serious about how important the city of St. Louis actually is to our state, because we are still the engine and we are still the economic heart of the city. And that's one thing that the Republicans, no matter where they are, cannot deny about St. Louis. And most importantly, we need someone in the seat to be able to speak about it. And right now, the seat is vacant.
Okay. Well, that's going to change real quick. We know that. And, yep. And let me also say that, you know, even, at this point, it's May 7th. It's getting pretty late in the school year. But
yeah.
come August, I would love to have you and Alicia and our next sheriff, Alfred, and it could be others that you all want to bring along too, and come down to the school and meet with our students and talk about different issues and things that they could be doing to really promote lots of good things that all of us really need to see happen, and even get some of these young people tuned into political activity so that, you know, 10 years from now, they can be like you.
Oh, absolutely. I love coming back to talking to Ritter. I think the last time I was there, I had just graduated from college. So I probably needed a whole conversation myself. I'm not going to lie to you. But I would definitely love to do that. I think you're absolutely right. We need to invite other young people in politics down to talk to kids. That's one other thing you asked me about knocking doors that I am doing with my campaign. I'm emphasizing this next generation of leadership. So I have interns, I have people in college that are studying politics, even high school students helping me knock doors. I know I've reached out to Ritter a couple times. So if you have any students in your classroom that potentially want to do this, let me know. I'm inviting them to come with me and see this because I think it's important. And I think for me, I will say, obviously, I'm young and I knew, and there are other candidates that are running for the seat as well. But I think what makes me different and the reason people are resonating with my message is that they see that energy coming from my campaign. Even though it's my first time running for a public office like this, I'm not new to politics. I can be a coach. I can be a mentor to other people. And that's one thing I'm emphasizing. So I would love to continue to share that story with your students because other people can do this too. And that's one thing that someone told me when I was young that I want to pass down to this next batch of students.
Absolutely. And we'll get you back on here talking more about, you know, different things that you're involved in and everything that we can do to support your candidacy. We will certainly do. So
I would love that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You have a great weekend, and we'll connect again.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mark. And thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jamie. Okay, Jamie Cox Antwi running in the 78th district for the assembly here in Missouri, and things are changing. I know that, you know, we wake up every morning and we hear some of these ridiculous stories, which today is no different. Today, not different at all. The stories coming out of the trial and everywhere else in this country are just so bizarre. You know, South Dakota's governor killing her dog and a goat, and the whole thing is just nuts. And what they think they're doing, I don't know. But I do know that they think they're ending democracy, but it's not that simple. And there are people fighting back, and certainly Jamie's one of them. And there are other people coming down the line similarly who are going to really fight hard. And as we get to the end of the session in the Missouri legislature, one of the things that you're going to see is, and you can see it actually on our website right now, if you go to talkstl.net, that's talkstl.net, you will see that, scroll all the way down, and you'll see that the executive producer of our program is a lady named Cheryl Dozier. Cheryl's going to be on very shortly as well. And she is the, as I already told Jamie, she's the head of the executive director of the Missouri Black Caucus. And she is working very hard to bring progressive politics into a strong position in the state of Missouri. And I think you're going to see all kinds of things happening between now and the election in November. And I think you're going to see a lot of them right here on the show, and I hope that it will stir a good deal of excitement for what can happen in politics in a state that at the moment is so right-wing, conservative, extremist, backward, not to mention anti-black. I mean, it's got to change, and it can, but it takes people to make the difference. Now, one thing the people need, let's face it, I mean, you can talk all you want, you can be excited, you can get involved, but you need a lot of energy. You need fuel. You need to have a good meal. And that's why we tell you to go to Wendy's. And that's at 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road. And that's in the valley in St. Louis, in Chesterfield Valley. And look, Wendy's has all the great food that you could ever imagine. They've got wings. They've got the smoked meats. They've got pizza. They've got patty melts. They've got hamburgers, cheeseburgers. But, you know, from my standpoint, they've got those baby back ribs, and they are fabulous. To me, you can't go wrong with the baby back ribs, but everybody likes something else, so you can try all the other different things that they've got at Wendy's. And that's an interesting point. I see something here from my good friend Bill Monroe, and I will get back to him if he must be listening. That's good. I'll get to you, Bill. I did not get the email, but I'll check, or at least I didn't see it. But look, you know, what I could do is I could set up a nice meeting for a nice meal with Bill Monroe at Wendy's. Because, listen, it doesn't matter whether you live in the city or you live in the county or you live in the valley or wherever you are. And pretty soon, if you're in Defiance, Missouri, you can also get Wendy's. So Wendy's is great, and we hope you'll go there. 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road. That's Wendy's. Now, if you're looking for jewelry, well, of course, Jewels on Hampton is at 4506 Hampton in the city at St. Louis. And, you know, Al is terrific when it comes to designing jewelry, when it comes to buying and selling it, when it comes to buying and selling coins, when it comes to fixing your watch. You know, I always talk about my 45-year-old gold watch that's a gorgeous Seiko. And, you know, it doesn't matter how nice it is. It doesn't matter. You know, it's if it gets old enough, it needs to be repaired. And mine is repaired. And I can tell you right now, you can get your watches repaired at Jewels on Hampton. Al and AJ, that's his son, they're there practically all the time. And it's just a great place for jewelry. You've got to go in and check them out. 314-752-5000, but don't call them. I never give out the number. Don't call them. Go to 4506 Hampton. Go and see AJ and Al, and I promise you, you'll have a great jewelry experience. Now, here I am once again with one of my suits. I love my suits, and I get them from the St. Louis Suit Company in Clayton. They've been there for 29 years. And as I say, they'll probably be there 29 years more because they're just a great place to go and buy suits and shirts and even dress shoes, which, you know, everybody knows I don't wear any dress shoes anymore because I only wear one thing, which you can't get there. And it's my Chucks, but don't worry about it. Everything else you can get at the St. Louis Suit Company, except for Chucks, but everything else. Prices are great. The ties are the best. $5 for a tie. You cannot beat it. If you want to wear suits and ties, which I do, then that's the place. The other thing is, if you're getting married, the place to go is the St. Louis Suit Company because they're terrific on weddings, very famous on weddings. So go there, talk to Jay and Nick, always the people that own these businesses. They're on site and they make these businesses work because they care about you. It's the St. Louis Suit Company, Forsyth and Central in Clayton. Check them out as well. Okay, so a couple of things. I think because I'm sort of feeling a little, you know, not well almost. I'm sort of having some kind of a withdrawal because I haven't said one word in 44 minutes about Donald J. Trump, who is in so much trouble. It is unbelievable. Oh, and I'm sorry. Before I say that, let me also say, which Bill put up on the board here, that Bill Monroe is running for St. Louis Public Schools School Board, And he has been on that board in the past and has had a tremendous amount of work and impact in education in St. Louis. And so he's running again. And Bill is terrific. Now, you might remember that name because Bill was supposed to be on the show maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. Don't worry, we're not upset with you, Bill. I know things happen. But at any rate, Bill is very excellent when it comes to education, cares about Black education in St. Louis, and knows what to do to make it great, originally involved with the whole Harriet Tubman School idea going back many years. It's a complicated story. When Bill comes on, we'll tell it. And you know, he may be on soon, maybe sooner rather than later. But at any rate, keep an eye on the St. Louis Board of Education race because Bill Monroe is in it. And Bill Monroe is somebody that needs to be in that Board of Education group. And especially in 2024, you know, Bill and I were very close friends together with my great partner, Onion Horton. And I can tell you that, you know, Bill knows everything about what needs to happen, both in education, public education, charter education, all of that. You know, Bill's been trying to get involved in charter schools again after he originally started a charter school years ago. And, you know, there are lots of problems over what's a good charter school, what's not. I think a lot of people probably saw what happened to KIPP not too long ago. The teachers were out on strike all over the place. KIPP's got enormous problems. I don't know, you know, how they think they're doing, but I know from what I've seen, it's an oppressive environment. It just is. You know, if you think you're going to walk into a school and you're going to tell kids, behave the way we say, comply with our demands, or else, and you think that anybody's going to learn there, you've got to be kidding. It just doesn't work. Young people need to have the opportunity to be creative, to be on their own, to be autonomous, to be educated in a scholarly way. And also in a way where the people who work with them care about them, not simply just throw around demands and think that you can get people to stand up straight and salute, because nobody likes that anyway. And especially in these communities which are surely underserved because of racism. That's just the answer. And we need to change it. And you don't change it by setting up these oppressive environments. And I suspect that that's part of the reason that these teachers were out on strike, because who wants that mess? And I don't even care what the numbers are. You could pay people anything, but if you treat them horribly, then they're not going to want to teach. They're not going to want to be involved. They're not going to want to be around. And that's everywhere. But at any rate, Bill will be here sooner rather than later. He's telling me on the board here, and that's very good. And so we'll definitely have that going on. You know, one other thing, and I didn't mention it to Jamie, and the reason I didn't is I didn't want to bring up that Trump mess, because this is Missouri, and we need to just get people elected and not sit here and harp on Donald J. Trump, who's a very sick man anyway. But aside from all of that, I can tell you these young people need to be involved in the election. When we get back to school in August, we've got a whole program set over at our school, and we're going to work with other schools at the same time. And we're going to follow the developments across the country all the way from August into the November election, and get the kids a real education in democracy, which I know, you know, is a lot of people, especially on the right, the Republicans are against it. I mean, they say kill democracy. You know, that's the push. And I can tell you that's, you know, the talking points straight out of Vladimir Putin. And, you know, by the way, speaking of Vladimir Putin, think about this. This guy, who is being supported widely by the Republican Party, by Republicans all over, he is currently back doing the same thing he was doing maybe 6-8 weeks ago, and that is threatening to attack with nuclear weapons. First of all, nuclear weapons in Ukraine. And secondly, nuclear weapons using intercontinental ballistic missiles. I mean, the man is out of sight in terms of anything that makes any sense. We all know that he's not going to do it, because if he did, he'd be gone. We'd be gone. Everybody would be. Long ago, everybody learned that you can't win a nuclear war. And yet, the Russians are talking about nothing but nuclear war, tactical nuclear weapons. If you listen to the news and you hear about the different things that they're doing to try to advance the potential for them to use tactical nuclear weapons in Ukraine, I just want to bring up a point. When they say tactical, they often say these are much less powerful than what we know of as these ICBM, things that they would, shoot across the Atlantic and then, destroy the entire United States, and we'd destroy them and we'd all be gone. No more Earth. But here's the thing. Those tactical nuclear weapons are more powerful than the atomic bombs that we used at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So, anybody who thinks, well, we could fight a war using tactical nuclear weapons. No, we can't. That's impossible. This is only in the imagination of a very seriously ill person. And the reason that it's so important to tie that into everything else that we're talking about is because, let's face it, Donald is in business with Vladimir Putin. And when I say in business, understand this. Donald's not his partner. Donald's his puppet. Donald's a nobody. Donald's broke. He's got maybe $4 billion in his pocket, or at least close to his pocket, because of that moronic deal that he set up, that DJT, which is, Trump media, whatever it is. Because, by the way, it doesn't do anything. It's got no business whatsoever. All it's got is a stock market valuation, which I know every night he probably cries when he goes to sleep, because he knows he can't tap it. It's 6 months before he can tap that thing. And 6 months from now, he's liable to be looking at that thing at, number one, $1 a share. And number two, he's going to be in jail. And that brings up another good point. And this is something that really it bothered me when I read it today. I know some people are feeling sort of excited about it, but I just warn to be careful, because Donald, we know, is not on the level. There's always some trick behind whatever he's doing. And he's got this judge that's in his pocket who is running the document trial out of Mar-a-Lago. So here's the problem. She now says that the date for the trial is going to be set in August. So all my friends are saying, well, that is terrific. So that means in August, we're going to really see this thing rolling along, in addition to probably, very likely, a sentencing that will come up upon conviction here maybe 2 weeks away. In the current case in Manhattan. So a lot of people are excited about that. Here's the problem. We have already heard from Aileen Cannon exactly what she would like to do. And she's not just what she'd like to do. She has told the Trump people what they can do in terms of getting rid of the case. And it very simply, she explained that if they wait until the jury has been impaneled down in Mar-a-Lago, the Mar-a-Lago case, then they should come back with all these immunity questions and everything else. And at that point, she said she'll reconsider the possibility of dismissing the case. We've talked about this, but it needs to be revisited right now because of this discussion of August as a date for the trial. Because if that happens in August and they impanel a jury in a very short period of time after that, I mean, they look how fast they did it in Manhattan. So let's say it takes them a week or 2 weeks. You know, if all of these people are winking at each other, and then after the jury is impaneled, they go to Aileen Cannon and say, by the way, as part of the pretrial motions, we would like to ask for this to be dismissed. And she turns around and says, okay, no problem. This case is dismissed. There's no going back. At that point, double jeopardy attaches, and there is no more case. So, obviously, Jack Smith's no dummy. And surely, he's going to find a way to approach this so he is not just walking into a trap come August. But she's already told us that that's her plan. She's already told the Trump people that that's what they should do, refile all of this come, you know, August or whenever, at the point when the trial begins and the jury's impaneled. So, you know, this is extremely dangerous business. And I just think that we need to be attuned to what these people are planning to do. It's not good. Now, in addition to all of that, there's a lot of talk, and I mentioned this in the last couple of days, but again today as well, and that is, does Donald want to go to jail? And it's sort of funny because people say, oh, definitely. He says he wants to go to jail. He says it every day. But a lot of people on the other side, still on, you know, the right wing, they say, oh, no, he doesn't want to go to jail. He's afraid of germs. And beyond that, he doesn't want to go to jail. But if that's true, he'd better change his behavior, because the very next time that he jumps up and goes berserk and violates the gag order and finds himself in contempt with Judge Mershon, well, guess what? Mershon said yesterday clearly, the next move is jail. I know it'll probably be for a day, and that's ridiculous in itself. But Mershon's trying to be careful. He doesn't want to see this overturned on appeal. And so he's going very gingerly in the direction of jail. And he said yesterday that the last thing he wants to do is put the former president and even a potential future president into jail, because it's just not good for our country. But if Donald wants to go, I don't think there's going to be any stopping him. And then the other thing is, can Donald control himself? And the reason I bring up that point is because at the trial today, and you'll know this tonight when you start listening to the news and following the shows, I warn you, not Fox, because at Fox they'll be talking about the weather report. But I can tell you right now that what's happening is that, you know, Donald is sitting in the courtroom and listening to Stormy Daniel telling stories that are just ridiculous. I mean, I don't even need to see this going on. This, yeah, everybody thinks it's funny, and they talk about, you know, what she's revealing about his sexual habits and problems. I don't even want to know it. I really don't. And I don't think the American people want to know it. We got a trial going on here that's on track to get Donald behind bars for probably a good 4 years on the basis of just the fact that he falsified his paperwork at his company, and then he used that to try to protect himself against being knocked out of the election in 2016. That's all against the law, and it becomes a felony by putting the two together, and it's totally on track. And the fact that Stormy Daniels showed up today, you know, I know it, everybody's got to giggle for it, but frankly, I'm not giggling. I don't think it's funny. I think there are a lot of things that are funny, but not this. I think that, you know, if Donald's not careful, he's going to lose his mind when she says things in court. But they're in the court begging now the judge to indicate a mistrial because she's inflaming the jury. But anyway, we'll come back and inflame you tomorrow with the help of Jules on Hampton and the St. Louis Suit Company and Wendy's. And I'm Mark Kaysen, and this is Showdown. Good night.